This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stacio. When producer Sonia Williams began researching for the 1990s radio series Black Radio, Telling It Like It Was, she found very little African-American radio drama from the 1940s. And the few tapes she found were negative stereotypes, mostly white actors portraying African-Americans. We're talking about Amos and Andy here. Well, a colleague suggested that Sonia Williams look into a program called Destination Freedom. The weekly broadcasts were created by journalist and activist Richard Durham in the 1940s, and the show featured African-American leaders and heroes like Sojourner Truth, Langston Hughes, and Booker T. Washington. Williams became enthralled with Richard Durham's life and work and eventually wrote a biography called Word Warrior, Richard Durham, Radio and Freedom. Sonia Williams is a professor at Howard University. She's going to be reading at Quail Ridge Books in Raleigh and then The Regulator in Durham. She also speaks at the Forum for Scholars and Publics at Duke University. And you can find out the times at our website, stateofthings.org. But first, she joins me on the program. Sonia Williams, welcome.
Hi, how are you?
Great, great. And what great. What a fine discovery. Tell us about Richard Durham. Who was he?
Oh, he was a phenomenal writer. An activist and socially conscious, he really looked at his writing as a means of promoting and talking about the universal principles that he believed every human being, wherever they lived, should enjoy, and that is freedom, justice, and equality. So his writing really served that purpose. He was a poet first. he's a really lyrical writer, and I know that comes from his poetry background. But he also was a pioneer in radio in terms of script writing. He was never on the air. He was always the man who conceived of the dramas and then actually wrote the scripts that were then enacted by what became kind of an ensemble group of actors in Chicago. But he also eventually then worked as a journalist for the Chicago Defender and Muhammad Speaks, which was the national newspaper of the Nation of Islam. And he wrote Muhammad Ali's autobiography in the 70s. And he also was a speechwriter for, of all people, Harold Washington, who became the first black mayor of Chicago.
And it's a name that, of course, if you're living here in Durham, you're familiar with the name. No connection, of course, but a name that you wouldn't have known. All of these accomplishments, and yet a guy who is behind the scenes in all cases, not a guy who wanted to be out front necessarily.
Not at all. In fact, his friends called him the shadows man, that he really didn't mind being in the shadows out of the spotlight. He was not the kind of guy who would come into a room and all eyes would move towards him and, you know, he'd bask in the glory. He was really someone who wanted to and did yield influence and power and also talk about education from a media perspective in what he wrote and how he approached his worldview. And that was that, you know, there is a universal need for everyone to kind of reach their potential, whatever that potential was. And that was him. But he didn't need to be out front to do that. He was really behind the scenes.
And yet he's got these incredible accomplishments as a reporter, as a poet, as we'll talk about a playwright in a minute for radio drama. But talk about that interview he had with the mayor of Memphis and how extraordinary that was.
Yeah, Ed Crump was the power broker back, and this happened in the mid 1940s during the World War II years. And he went to Memphis, and this was the first time that Crump had allowed a black reporter to interview him. Mm-hmm. And it also was the first time that in maybe several years that anyone from out of town had interviewed Crump. And he basically went there to talk with him about the treatment of African Americans in that city, the whole civil rights thrust, and how he viewed what was going on in Memphis, the poll tax, various other injustice. Crump, of course, felt that the city was fine, that his black population was fine. Mm-hmm. And what also, I guess, prompted Durham going down or being, you know, sent down by the Chicago Defender to interview Crump was that A. Philip Randolph, the union leader, revered union leader, was there speaking at a black church in Memphis. And Crump was just, he was livid because he saw A. Philip Randolph as a rabble-rouser coming from the North to, you know, rile up the black population and talk about union issues and that. And he was not impressed.
All right. So we're getting a pretty good vision of the man. And now let's talk about the series that he created, Destination Freedom. Tell us about that series.
Destination Freedom was a series of half-hour weekly programs. It started in June of 1948, and it ended in August of 1950. And Durham's idea was to look at African-American, and actually it wasn't even African, just African-American. They were black leaders around the world who, through their lives and their accomplishments, you know, really kind of were freedom fighters. They were people who espoused through their work the whole principle of freedom, freedom of expression, freedom of movement, you name it. And so he dealt with historical figures as well as contemporary. So everyone from, say, a Harriet Tubman or Denmark Vesey to Lena Horne and a Daniel Hale Williams, who was the first surgeon to successfully suture the human heart. So he had a range of subjects that he focused on, entertainers as well as artists and others, who just showed that black people were dignified. They have accomplished much in the world and in the United States. And it was an interesting snapshot of what we have done. But the other thing about Destination Freedom is that Durham didn't just say, okay, here was, say, Harriet Tubman's story. And Harriet Tubman was this slave who freed herself and then went back and was a conductor on the Underground Railroad and freed all these people. He found distinguishing characteristics about these people during his research. And then he humanized these figures by maybe picking a certain segment of their life and using that to dramatize and to bring into play really what was significant about.
Well, I want to play a clip from the Jackie Robinson program that I think illustrates this, because we all know the story of Jackie Robinson, good baseball player, and he could take it, the racial slurs. But let's listen to this segment from the piece on Destination Freedom on Jackie Robinson.
What do you think of Brooklyn Robinson?
I got nothing against it.
And what do you think of Jim Crow?
I'd like to knock
it. Okay, I know what you mean. That's part of the proposition. Maybe you'll make it, maybe you won't. I never seen you play. My scouts say you're okay. But for this, we need a cool, quiet sort of fellow. One who can keep out of trouble and not let Rising get him. You know what I mean?
You mean you want a guy who won't fight back when he's shoved around?
If he knows anything about baseball...
I know baseball, mister. It's a hard, aggressive game. But you can't swing hard on your knees. You gotta stand up and fight. That's the way I look. I'm sorry if I'm not your man.
Who said you were not the man?
Well, I thought you wanted...
Maybe I thought that, too. You look different. Maybe you're right. It's going to be a long, hard pull. It'll take a fighter to make it.
There's a clip from Destination Freedom, a program created by Richard Durham in the 1940s. Sonia Williams is the producer who discovered his work, or rediscovered his work, and we're talking about that today. That exchange between the characters playing Branch Rickey and Jackie Robinson shows another side of Jackie Robinson and perhaps Branch Rickey, that he was a fighter. He wasn't just going to lay down and take it. Fascinating insight.
Exactly. And, you know, that was the actors in that particular episode were actually Oscar Brown Jr. played Jackie Robinson. And Studs Terkel was that show's narrator, a kind of whimsical Brooklyn Dodgers fan who could see everything, including the fact that before Jackie Robinson even stepped onto a baseball home plate, he had two strikes against him simply because he was black.
Right. So it illustrated both the injustice and then, again, these sort of little-known features of the story itself. There were historic figures, contemporary well-known figures, but also original dramas. I want to play this clip from an episode called Cinderella, which is a kind of an original drama that, again, illustrates some of the issues that Richard Durham wanted us to be aware of.
You lost something, girl?
No. I was looking for better seats. Well, some of these are still empty.
Your first trip south on a train?
Yes, sir.
Why do they leave me to do the educating?
What's the matter?
Now, look around, Gail. What do you see?
People?
No, no. You don't see just people. You see white people. Only white people. I'm going back up at colored people's coach where you belong. It's the law of the land.
My mother paid to sit up here.
Will you get while the getting's good?
I won't.
Oh, yes, you will. Now, come on. Now,
I remember the grip as he twisted me around, dragged me through the aisle while passengers jeered and stared and laughed. A girl my age with blonde hair snickered. The door opened. I was thrown into the Jim Crow car. Then I knew my way to the Golden Slippers would be rocky. I was a Negro. I was Cinderella. My stepsisters were greed and bigotry, backed by those who make profit out of prejudice. When the train rolled into Miami, where the white buildings glowed like jewels in the sunlight and palm trees waved in the warm wind, I understood when my mother said...
All right, so that's fascinating. I mean, reframing Cinderella and making that the African-American story and the consciousness raising. Those aren't people, those are white people. We're not all people. I mean, incredible.
Right.
Subtlety.
And that actually was about Lena Horne. So that was... the show was actually called A Negro Cinderella, and it was the Lena Horne story. Lena Horne traveled. She was born and raised in New York, but she had to go when she was, I guess, a young adult to the South with her mother because her mother had to move South for health reasons, and that was her first trip South and had to deal with the whole Jim Crow segregation on the train.
I want to get this clip in before we run out of time. This is from the episode called Denmark VZ. I want to listen to it and talk about it in just a second.
Number nine pays 100 to 1. Who's got number nine, folks?
I got it. How much am I worth?
Name goes with it.
Denmark VZ. Check.
Check.
All right.
Beginner's luck will break me. You gambled heavy.
I always gamble heavy.
Say, you're Captain VZ's slave, ain't you?
I am.
I wonder what would happen to me, say, if I just refused to pay off a slave. I wonder if the courts would bother.
Uh-huh. Well, I wonder what would happen to me. Say, if I should take a barker's neck between my fingers, like this broomstick, and snap it, like that.
They'd hang you, you know it.
I gambled once, I'll gamble again.
Well, I'm not a gambling man myself. I don't gamble on my own neck.
Then how much am I worth?
$4,000.
All right.
Take it and the devil be with you.
There it is, the Denmark VZ episode of Destination Freedom, and there a real willingness to show that the depth of anger and the possibility of violence. I mean, I just find it incredible in the 1940s to put that on the radio.
Yeah, when I first heard a couple of the episodes of Destination Freedom, I was just blown away because it was like, what? This was on radio in 1948, 9, and 50? Oh, this is just amazing. By the way, Denmark VZ was one of the founders of the Emmanuel Baptist Church in South Carolina, in Charleston. And at the end of that episode, VZ, the VZ character, you know, talks about how until all men are free, the revolution goes on. And to hear a black character say that on radio in the late 40s was just, you know, just unheard of.
Who was listening? Do we know what the audience was for it?
I don't know. We don't know specifically in terms of numbers, but it was popular enough that there were several times in the early part of its run that the station WMAQ, which was the NBC affiliate, had to figure out whether or not they were going to continue the series. And because of the response, particularly from the black community, but also from more general listeners, it stayed on for 2 years.
Well, the production values are high. The acting is terrific. The writing is really good. I mean, you can compare it to some of the other radio drama of the day, and it compares quite well.
Definitely. It was award-winning. It won many awards for its presentation, its drama, and for its message.
And an opportunity for black actors and actresses as well?
Oh, definitely. And the other thing about it is that these were professional actors. So these were not just, you know, someone that Durham found. These were many of the actors, of course, Oscar Brown Jr., Wesley Tilden, Fred Pinkert, were also theatrical actors. They worked in the theater, so they brought their theatrical skills to radio, and that's why, you know, the performance level was high.
What do you think his legacy is? We didn't know too much about him. I guess I could ask you why he's not so well known, and what do you think is the legacy of Richard Durham?
Well, I think he's not well known, mainly because, again, he was a shadows kind of guy. I think several of the folks who I interviewed, both his family members and friends and colleagues, said that because radio was his initial entree to relative fame, I mean, he was more well-known in Chicago than anywhere else, but radio is, as we all know, not so much today, but back then was rather ethereal. You know, it was on the air every Sunday morning at 10 a.m., and it was off at 10:30, and if you missed it, you missed it,
right.
Unfortunately. The fact that, thank goodness, the transcriptions of those shows were saved, as well as the scripts, is the reason why we can listen to it now. But back in the 40s, you know, it was on live. They produced it live in the studio every week. So, again, it wasn't like today where you can then say, oh, well, let me run to the web and catch an episode.
The good news is now you can run to the web and catch an episode. And if you go to our website, stateofthings.org, we've got a link. It will take you to those episodes that were recorded.
Oh, good.
And Sonia Williams, thanks so much for bringing Richard Durham to our attention.
Oh, thank you so much. And I hope folks will come out. I'll be at Quail Ridge, as you mentioned, on Sunday at 2 o'clock and then at the Regulator Bookstore at 6 o'clock or 7 o'clock. On Monday, and then at Duke University.
You can get all that at
Tuesday.
Our website, stateofthings.org. Thank you so much. North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.